Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today looking forward to going through Tesla's Q2 earnings report, which we should get here in about 10 minutes if you are joining live. If you are joining afterwards, please check down below. You'll see the timestamps and you can fast forward right to when earnings come out. And then later today, we will also go through the earnings call. That'll be at about 4:30 Central Time. There's going to be a second stream for that. This live stream should direct you right there, but if not, the link is also in the description. So good to be back. A lot has happened since we last spoke. That would have been around the Robotaxi unveiling or launch, I guess more appropriately, down in Austin. So haven't had a chance to get back there, unfortunately, since doing the live stream to discuss that. So I don't really have any new thoughts, I guess, but looking forward to getting back down there sometime soon, hopefully testing out the expanded service area, which I'm excited to see expand pretty quickly here. I think the more meaningful milestone, of course, will be safety drivers or safety passengers at this point. When those get removed, I think that's the much bigger check mark. But in the interim period of time, it's really, really nice to see that expansion happen so quickly. Of course, Waymo followed up with that, expanding their service area almost immediately after Tesla expanded theirs in Austin to cover some parts that Waymo wasn't servicing. So Waymo answering back. It's really nice to see that healthy competition. I do have some thoughts on that that we'll go through in a second, but just to take a look quick at the stock here before we head into close and the earnings report, which should come shortly after close, looks like we're basically flat today. The markets are up a little bit, so underperforming the broader markets just by a bit, but of course doesn't really mean a whole lot. The results for today and for the week will really hinge on earnings, so we'll keep an eye on those to come. Can talk here a little bit about deliveries and production and quickly run through analyst consensus as well before we get into the actual report. So taking a look at the delivery and production report, obviously this came out a few weeks ago now, about 3 weeks ago, right at the end of the quarter. So 384,000 deliveries, mostly Model 3 and Model Y. The other models just over 10,000. This is obviously a pretty disappointing number on the other models line. Obviously, we hoped Cybertruck would be able to do more. Tesla's, I think, had some issues getting the prices down to a level that really can achieve volume in that category for Cybertruck. And then S and X, it's tough. Those vehicles, I think, compete pretty heavily with Model 3 and Model Y, and the value proposition on the latter two are just so much better that it, I think, makes it tough to drive any real volume there. So not surprising on that front necessarily. But hopefully something that Tesla can improve on in future quarters. That being said, we're talking here about, you know, other models, which is a subset of deliveries, which is a subset of one quarter's worth of production and deliveries, which is really just a small subset of what Tesla's business is starting to become with the launch now of Robotaxi. We've been talking now for, I don't know, the last 18 months, six quarters or so, just about my take as these delivery numbers come out, as we get the quarterly results as well. Really, I think the focus is and should continue to be on how quickly and how rapidly Tesla is improving their autonomy and the business around autonomy. And I think we've seen such massive steps forward on that with the launch of the Robotaxi network in Austin. I think so far things have gone relatively smoothly. Certainly there have been some areas where the safety passengers have had to do something. Those are always going to still be open to the question of what would have happened if there was not an intervention. Tesla should have a pretty good understanding of that. They should be able to kind of look at what the software would have been planning to do, or certainly put it into a simulation environment and see how the software would have reacted, versus a safety passenger is going to be someone there to prevent anything from possibly going wrong. That does sort of also exclude the possibility that maybe the vehicle figures it out itself. So it's always tough to know. That's one thing you learn a lot when you remove the driver, is how often those things happen. And Tesla will continue to learn and feel more comfortable as they collect more data and eventually hopefully get to that point pretty quickly where they can remove those safety passengers as well. So broader point being, in the context of these delivery and production numbers and in the context of the quarterly numbers that we're going to talk about here today, these are not really the future of Tesla's business, right? The future of Tesla's business is autonomy and robotics outside of even just vehicles. Doesn't diminish how important these things are to being able to fund those development projects and actually get Tesla to the point where they can deliver autonomous vehicles at scale. Obviously, being at scale on EVs already is such a critical factor for that, that no one has that combination of EV scale and autonomy like Tesla does, and seemingly not really much of a path to do so, with maybe the possible exception of China. But outside of China, I don't see anyone that sort of has that combination of ingredients, which has sort of always been the case here with Tesla. And we've seen the EV business scale. Now we're sort of on the precipice of seeing the autonomy portion of the business scale as well. So it's an exciting period of time. Unfortunately, that excitement is diminished a little bit by what has been a little bit tougher, sort of the fundamental part of the business as it exists today with deliveries and production. So anyway, 410,000 vehicles produced, 384,000 delivered. I was just looking back at last quarter's earnings report. I guess I closed it out there. But Tesla, in the first quarter, of course, had the Juniper refresh with the Model Y, the new Model Y. So as expected, inventory did increase a little bit that quarter after coming off of basically a multi-year low coming into Q1. And then, of course, Tesla's going to produce vehicles. It's going to take time to get those vehicles out and get those vehicles sold. How much of that happened in Q1? How much of that continued in Q2? It's a question that we're going to have to wait on an answer for as we get into Q3 and then eventually get the Q3 results and see how production and deliveries compare there. But we now have had inventory build up for a couple of quarters. We should be pretty much fully through the Model Y refresh at this point. So really any softness in deliveries, I think we've already started to see some of that from the demand side. And I think that's probably likely to continue with the possible exception of Q3. Of course, we've got the now what is expected to be the expiration of the U.S. federal EV tax credit happening at the end of Q3. So that should pull forward a pretty significant chunk of demand into that quarter. And then Q4 may be tough, but obviously the U.S., although the biggest market, I think would have to double check that with China, but either way, a significant portion of Tesla's sales. So that's a factor for both Q3 and Q4. But overall, point being here, even with the new Model Y, I still think we're seeing delivery and demand levels top out below where we had seen them in the past. So that means Tesla's core business is maybe relatively poorly performing relative to where it has been in the past. But again, as long as it continues to bring in free cash flow and provide both funding and scale for where Tesla is taking the business in the future, that's, although not what you would pick it to be, it is still sort of an okay situation. So that's kind of how I view things at the moment. And again, that's context for as we go into the earnings report today. This isn't something that, you know, I'm sitting on the edge of my seat for to see the results like maybe some quarters in the past. I think this is more of just like a period where we're waiting to see what the development and how quickly the development happens with Robotaxi, specifically in Austin and hopefully in other locations before the end of the year, which I would expect Tesla to reiterate on the call today. So I'm mostly looking forward to the earnings call to see what commentary, what things we can pick up around that, which isn't going to come as much from, you know, delivery numbers or the gross margins, things like that, which, although, again, not unimportant, probably wouldn't be my top point of interest as we head into the report today. So hopefully that makes sense. It's an interesting time where I'm not trying to diminish some of the relative weakness that we've seen to compared to historicals with the core business, but also not trying to lose focus and excitement on all of the progress and developments that we've seen on what will eventually be Tesla's core business in the future and what they're clearly working towards. All right, so we're at market close now. I do want to flip over just quickly to Excel. We can take a look at the analyst consensus here. We should have a couple of minutes before this report comes out. It's usually pretty timely after market close, but let me just flip over real quick and we'll just run through these numbers, which again, not something that I think we need to spend a ton of time on. Sorry, I'm a little rusty controlling the stream here. All right. So as we do each quarter, we'll go through and when the numbers come out, we'll fill this in just kind of into the summary sheet. You can see analyst consensus just below $22 billion in total revenue. That would be slightly up for last quarter, but down versus Q2 last year, which of course driven by fewer deliveries, down 13% year over year for the delivery number, which we just talked about. Obviously, some of that driven by the Model Y refresh, I still think having an effect in the second quarter. The question is just how significant. Had there been no effect, would that have been 450,000? I doubt it, but maybe something a little bit higher than the 384 that it came in at. 3.6 billion gross profit expectation, same sort of margins as the last couple of quarters is what analysts are expecting. Makes sense. Hopefully, though, as the Juniper refresh happens, production gets smoother, costs can come down. There should be efficiencies through that. And then, of course, scale as you have significantly more deliveries in Q2 than in Q1. So I'd hope for maybe a little bit better number there, but obviously there's a lot of factors that will influence that we don't have quite the time to go through at the moment, because I'll need to flip back and see if that earnings report is out. 4.3% operating margin expectations, quite a bit higher than last quarter. We did talk last quarter about how R&D spiked up a little bit, which drove operating incomes down. If you're going to have a lower operating income from higher operating expenses, I'd be glad to see it come from R&D. Presumably that is money that Tesla feels they'll get a good return on going forward, versus SG&A is more of like a fixed cost of operating the business. So of the two, we talked about how that was a little bit better to see. So at any rate, Street expecting a little bit lower operating expenses and then a fair amount better operating margin with the scale of revenue and slightly lower expenses. We'll get into this. I guess one thing to talk about on just sort of like the bottom line numbers, analysts are only expecting about $12 million of impact from the Bitcoin mark to market. I looked at the analyst consensus. The median there was zero for their forecast. So I think a lot of analysts are just skipping that, which is leading to the average being low here. This should be actually quite a bit higher. The mark to market last quarter was 100 million. Bitcoin performed well in the second quarter as well. So should see a much more significant number there. That goes into the non-GAAP net income and non-GAAP earnings per share, which is usually what people are forecasting. So if that does beat, that could be one reason. But it would be taken out before the GAAP earnings per share number. So just something to keep in mind as we get into those. All right, let me flip back here and we'll see if earnings are out. Hopefully not quite. Tesla, you can now go ahead with the release if you haven't yet. All right. Flip back to the browser. We'll refresh here. Usually my first hint is some pretty significant movement after hours. It doesn't look like we have any movement yet. And I'll keep an eye on the chat just to see. That's usually a good spot to see. Sometimes you guys catch it before I do, so. We'll begin the game of refreshing. And I'll keep an eye on chat here. If people do have questions, let me know. Lyle, thank you for the super chat. I appreciate that. You guys don't need me, but I do appreciate the sentiment. All right, let's see. Again, Tesla's earnings call will be at 4:30 today, Central. That's what I'm probably most looking forward to today, just any commentary around the business, particularly Robotaxi, and how Tesla views that rollout going. I guess on that note, I did say I'd had a little bit more thoughts on the Waymo expansion. It's interesting that they did that so quickly. It was like a little bit of a head scratcher for me. Maybe it's something they've been planning for a while. And I was thinking a little bit more about it. And since in Austin, I know this is not the case in all locations for Waymo, but in Austin, the only way you can get a Waymo is through the Uber app. There is no standalone app. Please correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty certain that's the case. There is no standalone Waymo app in Austin, which, if you think about the meaningfulness of a service area expansion, if you can't actually request the vehicle specifically, then it doesn't really mean a whole lot. Because, for example, if you're in one of those more remote, quote-unquote remote areas of the expanded service area, let's just say the new area, and you're there and you're on the Uber app, the likelihood that you get a Waymo, I think, is probably quite a bit less likely than if you're in sort of like the more general older coverage area. And this is obviously speculative, but the point being is that since Waymo has other Uber vehicles to rely on, they don't really need to send their cars to any parts in particular of the service area. They could just let an Uber pick up that ride instead, which would obviously happen, just based on how the apps work. Tesla, having solely the Robotaxi app and not integrating with any other app, not relying on any other drivers or anything like that, if Tesla expands the service area, then that, you know, is significant. It means that the vehicles have to go there. They don't have a choice to rely on Uber to get to those parts of, you know, the service area. So not a very succinct way of stating this, but I hope that makes sense of just sort of the difference in meaningfulness or difference in how important that geofence is when there is not a specific standalone Waymo app. I'm slightly getting distracted here. Looks like there's some movement, but I'm not seeing the report yet. Let me know if you guys are seeing it. Someone's saying it's not out. Sometimes this will happen too. You just see these random spikes. More frequently, though, it's just a matter of my internet being behind. Yeah, do a hard refresh. All right, let's see. All right, cleared the cache, refreshed, nothing. Well, that's not doing anything for us. Yeah, I'm thinking it's not out yet. Some of you are saying the same, so I think we just are just seeing some after hours movement. I'm on a Mac, by the way, people giving me shortcut tips. Yeah, so it sounds like Google's earnings is out. Just going off the chat here. And that could be moving just generally stocks, specifically tech stocks, after hours. See if we can pull that up. Well, looks like they're down, but yeah, usually Tesla's earnings are out by now, but there have been times in the past where it's, you know, 15 minutes after close or something like that, so. Oh, thanks, Farzad. Aren't you streaming? Appreciate that. Pretty envious of Farzad because he just is in Austin, so he can just use the Robotaxi in day-to-day life, which is awesome. Yeah, I think we're just waiting now. Or still. The second most exciting part of the live stream, second only to me filling out my numbers on the spreadsheet. Someone's saying audio drop. Someone's saying that the earnings are out. I never know what to believe with you guys. My biggest fear of live stream days is that something will go wrong technically. It used to be that I would say something stupid, but I think I've said enough stupid things now that I'm not as scared about that. There we go. All right, Q2 2025 update. Let's just take a real quick look at the bottom line numbers here. So 40 cents non-GAAP, so that's very slightly, I think 1 penny above analyst expectations. 33 cents GAAP was, I believe, above 28 cents. So it looks like the bottom line numbers were pretty good. GAAP gross margin 17.2, so that's up 90 basis points quarter over quarter, which is, again, also above analyst expectations. Top line revenue also above analyst expectations. Gross profit obviously then as well. Operating expenses, those were also above analyst expectations, which you don't necessarily want to see that, those higher expenses, but ultimately yielding a similar to expected income from operations here. Sorry, I know I was covering a little bit of that. But overall, it looks like mostly a beat pretty much across the board. Free cash flow slightly below what analysts expected, but that's, you know, driven a lot by CapEx, which no one can really forecast that well, so not a huge deal. I think the most significant things, top line beat, margin beat, and yielding overall a bottom line beat. So I suspect the stock is probably up a bit, but not too much movement yet. So just kind of level setting that. Again, we're going to have to look through, see what's driving this. I want to go through the summary. As I've made the mistake a few quarters ago, or for many quarters in a row, I do want to look at the outlook section first too, because that'll drive a lot of the immediate movement here. So let's just keep going down. We can check what the outlook section is. All right, so for volume, it's difficult to measure the impacts of shifting global trade and fiscal policies on the automotive and energy supply chains, cost structure, and demand for durable goods related services. While we are making prudent investments that will set up both our vehicle and energy businesses for growth, the actual results will depend on a variety of factors, including broader macroeconomic environment, the rate of acceleration of our autonomy efforts and production ramp at our factories, sufficient cash, we'll continue to do that, profit, we continue to execute on innovations to reduce cost of manufacturing and operations over time. We expect our hardware-related profits to be accompanied by an acceleration of AI software and fleet-based profits. I think that's the same language as before. And then finally, on outlook for product, our focus remains on prudently growing our vehicle volumes in a capex-efficient manner by using our existing vehicle production capacity before building new lines. Plans for new vehicles that will launch in 2025 remain on track, including initial production of a more affordable model in the first half of 2025, which we are now through. So it looks like Tesla confirming that they did start some initial production of a more affordable model. We'll see what they have to say about that on the call, but I think that's a good sign that they've reiterated that. I'll talk more about that in a second. Our purpose-built Robotaxi product, CyberCab, will continue to pursue a revolutionary unbox manufacturing strategy and is scheduled for volume production starting in 2026. So I believe that part is still the same. On the more affordable vehicles, particularly in the U.S., with the EV tax credit expiring at the end of the third quarter, it probably makes most sense for Tesla to, even whether it's delayed from production standpoint or whatever, it probably makes sense to shift that into the fourth quarter. Just to maximize the sort of average selling price of the vehicles that are going to have this heightened demand in this quarter and then lower demand in next quarter. We've talked a lot about demand pockets over the years. This is something that creates one of those, right? It's going to pull forward demand into Q3. It's going to remove demand from Q4. If Tesla can help balance that out a little bit by not launching a lower cost vehicle in the third quarter in the US and doing that in the fourth quarter instead, it just makes a ton of sense. So that would be what I would expect, absent other complicating factors, of which there are certainly always a lot of, but just wanted to kind of mention that as this is part of the outlook section here. But again, if they can get production started and stockpile a bunch of those cars or something like that, or at least work through the initial stage of production kinks, I think that's a great first step, and then hopefully can really launch that meaningfully in the fourth quarter, or at least sometime after that tax credit expires. So nothing too new on that outlook section, I don't think. And it looks like the numbers relatively strong to expectations. So I think, you know, we're off to a pretty good start here with the earnings report. Again, level setting this, that this is probably not the most important part of today for me, but still good to see stronger numbers than weaker, certainly. So nice to see that. Let's go through the summary here. Q2 2025 was a seminal point in Tesla's history, the beginning of our transition from leading the electric vehicle and renewable energy industries to also becoming a leader in AI, robotics, and related services. Our first robotaxi service launched in Austin in June. While the service is limited in initial scope, we believe our approach to autonomy, a camera-only architecture with neural networks trained on data from our global fleet of millions of vehicles, allows us to continually improve safety, rapidly scale the network, and improve profitability. We continue to expand our vehicle offering, including first builds of a more affordable model in June, with volume production planned for the second half of 2025. Additionally, we continue development of Semi and Cybercab, both slated for volume production in 2026. So I think that's kind of confirming what we just talked about there. First builds this month, they seem to have kept that well under wraps. I mean, we do have that six-seat Model Y, but I don't think that would be the more affordable model that they're referring to here. I can't see how a six-seat version would be, a larger six-seat version would be the more affordable version, but, you know, we'll see what Tesla has to say about that on the call. If anything, they'll probably try to avoid mentioning that as much as possible for fear of Osborne-ing. The energy business is more critical than ever. The availability of clean, reliable energy is necessary for economic growth and an imperative for the development and commercialization of AI-enabled products and services. As electricity demand grows, our Megapack product helps to increase utilization of existing generation and transmission capacity, resulting in a more efficient use of the electric grid. When paired with solar PV, Megapack is cost competitive with traditional fossil fuel generation assets and can be deployed 4 times faster than traditional fossil fuel plants of the same capacity. Trailing 12-month energy storage deployments achieved their 12th consecutive quarterly record. Despite a sustained uncertain macroeconomic environment resulting from shifting tariffs, unclear impacts from changes to fiscal policy and political sentiment, we continue to make high-value investments in CapEx and R&D while ensuring a strong balance sheet. Our priorities remain the same, delivering affordable and compelling autonomy-capable models that maximize our global fleet of vehicles as our autonomy software continues to rapidly progress, growing the energy business and advancing our robotics efforts. So looking at some of the highlights, $900 million GAAP operating income, $1.2 billion GAAP net income, $1.4 billion non-GAAP net income, cash operating cash flow, $2.5 billion, obviously a lot of that going towards expanded capital expenditures, free cash flow of about $100 million, $0.2 billion decrease in cash and investments, but still sitting at around $37 billion at quarter end. Operations, launched robotaxi service in Austin, delivered first customer vehicle fully autonomously, deployed first Megapacks for Megafactory Shanghai, which is important. I did want to mention they did talk about the 12th consecutive quarterly record for trailing 12-month energy storage deployments. That's a great way to look at it. Trailing 6-month is probably my most preferred way to look at it. That's starting to flatten out, but of course that's because the Lathrop facility is reaching maximum production capacity. So we are starting to have now the Shanghai Megapack facility come online. That should hopefully start to allow that energy deployment line to start growing again, maybe as soon as next quarter. But if not, certainly I would think by the end of next year, end of this year, early next year. Sorry, a lot of noises outside. All right, so we went through, I think, most of these. We'll come back to these numbers again, just kind of reflecting on it a little bit. I'm probably most pleased that the gross margin number is improving, and that the revenue top line number was a beat. Looks like probably most of that coming from, could have been all lines. Let me quickly see what auto revenue was expected from analysts. $16 billion flat, basically. So a little bit of a beat, I think, on all three of those subcategories. No, energy sales looks like they had expected quite a bit higher, which didn't really make sense since quarter over quarter energy storage deployments were down, but typical for the consensus numbers, something weird like that. So again, we'll come back to those in a minute. Looking at the financial summary here, so total revenue decreased 12% year over year, so these are all going to be year over year changes. Revenue impacted by the following items: decline in vehicle deliveries, lower regulatory credit revenue, reduced average selling price, excluding foreign exchange impact, due to mix, so basically selling more cheaper vehicles, less expensive vehicles, decline in energy generation and storage revenue due to the lower ASP, offset a little bit by growth in services and other. Profitability, operating income decreased 42% year over year to $0.9 billion, resulting in a 4.1% operating margin. Year-over-year operating income was primarily impacted by the following items: lower regulatory credit revenue, increased OPEX, driven by AI and other R&D projects, decline in vehicle deliveries, increase in stock-based compensation, offset a little bit by decreasing in restructuring charges, lower cost per vehicle due to mix and lower raw materials, partially offset by lower fixed cost absorption and an increase in tariffs, plus aided by growth in energy generation and storage gross profit. So this is what I'm talking about when I'm saying the core business is not great relative to where it was historically. You can see 42% decline in operating income year over year. Definitely not the number that we'd prefer to be talking about here. But you've also got a lot of excitement due to FSD version 13, since Tesla was reporting, you know, that higher operating income number last year. FSD version 13, I don't think at that time existed. And that's been such a massive step forward and has allowed them to start the robotaxi service in Austin. And, you know, when we're sitting here again in 12 months, thinking about how much progress they've made in that period of time, if that sort of rate of progress can continue, next year when we're sitting here and talking about autonomy, it's going to be a very different picture. So I'm very excited about that, despite some numbers here that are certainly less exciting than some of the quarterly numbers we've had a chance to talk about at points in time in Tesla's history. Quarter end cash, $37 billion, as we mentioned. Slight decrease, primarily the result of changes in restricted cash and cash used in financing activities, partially offset by free cash flow. Production, deliveries, we talked about. Leases, looks like those were quite a bit down quarter over quarter and year over year. It's kind of interesting. That'll change our ASP calculations a little bit, but we'll figure that all out here in a minute. So global inventory, that's what I talked about, an increase here again, up to 24 days. And that 24 days is actually more cars, because this inventory is calculated based off of the total delivery number for the quarter. So when you have a higher delivery number, that makes a day of inventory more vehicles. When you have a higher sales number, that makes a day of inventory more vehicles. So then you have more vehicles per day and also a larger number of days here. Storage deployed, we've talked about. Mobile service continues to decline, again, pretty sharply. I don't know if Tesla's maybe completely winding that down or just right-sizing it a little bit. We'll have to see, you know, something to keep an eye on. But for the last couple of quarters, that has been declining. But total Tesla locations continues to increase at a pretty healthy clip there. Supercharging, both connectors and stations, both continuing to increase as well. I know there's a lot of expected volatility, but we really have not seen that, just based on like the supercharging team and the turnover on that. That really has not come through in terms of the actual, you know, deployments. So something to recognize as potentially an overreaction in terms of the commentary around that issue at that time. So it's good to kind of level set that with the numbers here. All right, getting into their further commentary on automotive, we continue to make progress preparing for the launch of additional models this year. Our entire model lineup is better than ever with recent updates. Our ongoing focus on supply chain robustness has enabled a resilient vehicle capacity base despite trade and policy uncertainties. We produced our 8 millionth vehicle in June. In the US, we had record test drives in North America, up 20% sequentially. Given the recent refreshes in our product portfolio and rapid improvement in FSD Supervised, it's paramount we maximize the number of prospective customers experiencing our vehicles. In May, the team launched the long-range rear-wheel drive Model Y with 357 miles of range, starting under $45,000 before incentives, opening the Model Y portfolio to more potential buyers. That's a nice little statistic, not something we usually get from Tesla, but up 20% sequentially. Now, you don't know, Q1 test drives could have been low for whatever reason in North America, particularly if vehicles maybe weren't being as made available with the Model Y refresh. If another way to say it, if Q1 was down 20% versus the prior quarter, then up 20% from that lower point, not as good. So it's hard to tell with just this one piece of context. But I guess they do say record test drives here, so I'll talk over myself and say that that is still a very good sign for North America in terms of the test drives there. And I do agree with the points here that, you know, more people in vehicles is probably Tesla's best selling tactic, just because the product is so fantastic, particularly FSD Supervised version 13 with hardware for vehicles. I think there's probably people that are watching this that read about Tesla probably every day that still have not experienced version 13. If you're one of those people, go take a test drive. It's so good. Version 13 is really so good. I think that you need to experience it to really get an understanding of really how much progress Tesla has made with FSD. I've said this a couple of times now. I'm over 5,000 miles on my vehicle, my new Model 3 that I got in December. I think I've had one intervention that was like maybe safety critical. And it's one of those things where I had to take over because I didn't I wasn't extremely confident that it would make the right choice, but that doesn't mean that it is impossible that it would have made the right choice. It was just an abundance of caution on my part. But yeah, pretty much, I don't know, 95% of my driving's on FSD, and it's been phenomenal. I'll also take this time to just make a point about this FSD beta community tracker thing. I think it's nonsense. I think people disengage far too frequently just because they're like nervous or uncomfortable, or their margin of safety is not the same as the vehicle's, which is fine for those people, but it's not fine for data collection purposes. I think that this 375 miles or whatever is nonsense. And my own experience of having one in 5,000 miles basically gives me like a 99% confidence interval of that. So I'll just passionately say my piece on that real quickly before we move on. All right, Asia Pacific. So Gigafactory Shanghai remains our main export hub and continues to support greater market expansion. We achieved record delivery volumes in South Korea, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Singapore. In July, we launched the Model Y in India, marking our entry into the world's third largest car market. The refresh Model 3 earned a 5-star overall safety rating from ANCAP, achieving 95% in the child occupant protection pillar, the highest result recorded to date against ANCAP's 2023 to 2025 criteria. We continue to prepare for broader release of FSD supervised in China this year, pending regulatory approval. I think many of you have probably seen the reports on FSD for Australia. It sounds like that's making good progress and is very close to being launched. So also excited about that. It would have been nice if Tesla had mentioned that in here, but maybe didn't quite make the cut for the footnotes here. Europe and Middle East, Model Y was the best-selling vehicle in Norway year-to-date, and in Turkey, Netherlands, Switzerland, and Austria in June. The refresh Model 3 achieved a 5-star overall safety rating from Euro NCAP and is the safest car in Europe based on the latest Euro NCAP test scores. We continue to prepare for the launch of FSD supervised in Europe this year, pending regulatory approval, which is doing some heavy lifting since I think that's the only reason that it is not released yet in Europe. Obviously, that continues to just kind of be a bit of a mess with the regulations there. It's very unfortunate, especially since Tesla continues to publish the safety statistics each quarter. I know sometimes people disagree with how that's reported. We've talked a lot about that. Some of those criticisms are definitely valid, but I think it's nonsense to limit this sort of a system, which I think there are very good arguments that it improves safety. I think there are not very many, if any, arguments that are data-driven that it does not improve safety. So hopefully Europe will get that figured out sometime soon here. Let's look at this annual vehicle capacity chart. I doubt that this will be too different from last quarter, but let's just pull last quarter up here and we can compare. All right, that's not it, we'll close that. All right, so this is Q2. 100,000, 559,50, 300,000, 375,250, 125,000, production, design, development. So all the same here. No changes there quarter over quarter to that table. Market share. I'm actually glad that Tesla is continuing to provide this chart. A lot of times what you see companies do, I'm sure Tesla's done this in the past, it's a very reasonable thing to do, but when charts stop looking favorable, generally they sort of make their exit from the materials. Nevertheless, Tesla is still continuing to show this market share number, even though certainly in the US you can see that the market share has declined over the last 18 months. Less so in Asia, it's more of a flatline situation. Europe also kind of following that same curve, maybe a little bit sharper drop here. I would imagine that's sort of politically influenced, at least to an extent. We'll see how that changes in the future. But I'm glad that Tesla is sort of recognizing this and acknowledging it, and hopefully in the future we see these market share numbers revert, and then Tesla can, you know, have something to be proud of with that chart. Not that this isn't already something to be proud of, even with the decline. It's, you know, what Tesla's accomplished over the years is tremendous. Core technology. All right, AI, software, and hardware. In June, we launched our robotaxi service in the first city, Austin, with a safety rider. We will further improve and expand the service, more vehicles covering a larger area, eventually without a safety rider, while testing in other U.S. cities in anticipation of additional launches. Our efforts to refine the robotaxi offering in Austin are not location-specific and will allow us to scale to other cities quickly with marginal investment. We achieved the world's first autonomous delivery to a customer with a new production Model Y driving itself about 30 minutes from the factory across town to its new owner's home, including on highways. We expanded AI training compute with an additional 16,000 H200 GPUs at Giga Texas, bringing Cortex to a total of 67,000 H100 equivalents. I won't speculate. I can't remember the last number that Tesla gave us on the H100 numbers. But again, notice that the differences there, just newer NVIDIA hardware using sort of the H100 equivalents there, since these are going to be obviously more effective than the H100s. Here we can see FSD miles on V12 and beyond continuing to scale each quarter. If you kind of pinpoint the math on here, looks like that's right around a billion miles in the second quarter added. So it's nice to see. Tesla AI training capacity ramp through end of September. All right, perfect. So there we can see, we don't have to speculate. You can see just the additions. And it looks like Tesla even doing a little bit of a forecast there for the third quarter to add maybe 20,000, 18,000 or something like that, H100 equivalents here in the third quarter, which they should have good confidence in. It's not a very far looking forecast. So nice to see. You can see where we were not even 2 years ago. Not 100 times that, but more than probably 10 times where we were at that point. All right, vehicle and other software. Our cars get better over time. A 2017 Model 3 owner today has access to features that did not exist when the car was built: improved security and safety, increased convenience, and entertainment options, among many others, all delivered for free via software updates. We launched the Robotaxi mobile app, which leverages existing Tesla app features and provides a seamless customer experience. With the Tesla profile, customers can request a ride, follow the vehicle's location, preset cabin temperature, unlock the car using their phone, have access to their favorite entertainment, and securely pay for the ride with their payment profile. Not that this is surprising. I mean, we all know Tesla can make an app. The app is, I think, quite strong, and there's already been, I don't know, probably 5 different revisions just in the last month since Robotaxi launched to the app that I think have already addressed a lot of the initial feedback that people had. So exciting to see, you know, how well Tesla has done that part. And I think at some point Tesla will very likely be best in class or on par with best in class just in terms of the app experience for any sort of ride sharing. Battery powertrain and manufacturing. Our lithium refining and cathode production plants remain on track to begin production in 2025, onshoring production of critical battery materials to the U.S. We are on course to begin domestic production of our first LFP cells for our energy storage products later this year. All right, energy and services and other. See the trailing 12-month gross profit. Looks like a combination of both of those lines of business, and then energy storage deployments trailing 12-month. So you can see this is what Tesla's talking about. Just barely setting a new record there over the last 12 months. But certainly, as we get right at this 40 gigawatt hours of capacity, which is, of course, Lathrop's production capacity, starting to plateau a little bit there, and the next phase of growth will then have to come from the Megafactory in Shanghai. And then I believe there's that third one, I think in Texas, that is under development at the moment. So hopefully that can then keep that growth going after Shanghai sort of reaches capacity. All right, so energy storage deployments continue to grow as we expand capacity for both Megapack and Powerwall to meet demand globally. Services and other, a collection of businesses that mainly supports vehicle sales, also continues to grow alongside our global fleet of vehicles. Energy storage deployments once again increased on a trailing 12-month basis, including record Powerwall deployments for the 5th consecutive quarter. Gross profit increased sequentially and year over year, reaching a record of $846 million. We started deploying megapacks from Megafactory Shanghai as the ramp continues as planned. Regionalizing energy storage manufacturing capacity is critical for meeting demand, given shifting tariff, trade, and fiscal policies globally. For services and other, gross margin profit grew 64% sequentially, partially due to improved supercharging gross profit generation from increased volume. We added over 2,900 net new supercharging stalls, growing the network 18% year over year. As we continue redefining the vehicle buying and ownership experience, we have integrated AI agents to help resolve customer queries, reduce wait times for service, and even provide assistance when placing an order for accessories, parts, and products. without having to wait for a person. We are leveraging the same technology in our service technician workflow to help improve turnaround times for service. Outlook we already talked about, so I think that takes us into photos and charts. And then we'll also go through the process of filling out the financial summary and talk a little bit more about the numbers. So this is a slide, or you know, a little image map here that Tesla had previously released, I think, in the impact report, which came out shortly or earlier in Q3 or at the end of Q2. But just a nice visualization of how Tesla views themselves and views the future relating to Tesla's ecosystem. FSD supervised testing around the world, Paris, London, Sydney, and Rome. So a little bit of a mention there for Australia. First autonomous delivery of a vehicle. Model Y. From everything we can tell, everything that's been reported, and unless this is like a hoax or something, which Tesla Q would love, but obviously not the case, it sounds like this was just a random customer that had ordered a Model Y. Tesla called him up and said, you know, we're going to do this autonomously if you're good with that. And they said yes. And I think it happened pretty quickly there, and maybe in the next week or something like that. So pretty cool that it wasn't just like an employee purchase or something like that. It truly was just a customer ordering. Obviously, it would be someone that Tesla's comfortable with the route, but still cool to see. Tesla Diner, first responders event. So obviously the diner just now opening. Some pretty cool things that Tesla's done there in terms of integrations with ordering, being able to order when you're on the way to the station, for example. I think that feature is really nice. I think that's something that Tesla could integrate with other retailers, I suppose, or you know, service providers of restaurants, things like that. Because that's always something, you know, if you've experienced road tripping in a Tesla, something you always try to do is like time out your food to optimize optimize your schedule and your time for the day. So if that can be built in, similar to how supercharging planning is built into the sort of routing system, I think that's great. Some more Tesla Diner stuff. Got the Cybercab there. Largest supercharger site in the world. So I think, I don't know if this is off-grid completely, but has the capability to be off-grid completely with both megapacks and a massive amount of solar here to provide for these 168 stalls, which is really cool. 8 million vehicle there. Looks like that was in Giga Berlin. And then some of the charts here, which we'll talk through the numbers in a second. We'll just take a quick look at regulatory credit sales while we happen to be here, since that's something we didn't talk about yet. Looks like that was $439 million. So nothing out of the ordinary there, even actually quite a bit lower than what we've seen for the last few quarters, which I would interpret as a good thing because we already saw that gross margins were better than expected by analysts, and these regulatory credits were probably in the ballpark, if not lower than expected, which means that gross margin strength is actually coming from the cars, the vehicles themselves, the products themselves, rather than relying on what could be fleeting in terms of regulatory credits. And obviously, this has been a hot topic in terms of what's going to happen with regulatory credits, particularly in the United States. I think people need to realize that these regulatory credits are coming worldwide. It's not just in the U.S., so it's not like this is just going to immediately go to zero, regardless of what happens in the U.S., so something to keep in mind on that part. But again, these are subject to the political whims, so at any time could go away, which is why if you're going to see gross margin strength, obviously you want it to be from the actual sale of vehicles and things like that, or from the sale of products versus coming from the regulatory credits. But the regulatory credit money is great. It's provided at this point billions and billions of dollars for Tesla at this point to expand and grow and get to where they are today. And again, these are regulatory credits that are getting paid from other companies, not from, it's not like Europe is writing a $439 million check or something. It's coming from other companies that are not meeting their compliance targets. So also a good reminder. I'm sure everyone here knows that, but just a reminder. Let's see if we get Bitcoin broken out here anywhere, digital assets. not seeing it. It's probably there somewhere. Well, we'll figure that out. Digital assets. $284 million gain. I don't know, this is a new line item, so, and this is, I don't do my in-depth, as in-depth of forecasting anymore, so. Let's see. It looks like it's $284 million gain. I'll have to figure that out, though. The reason I'm, like, hung up on that is I thought it was $97 million last quarter, so I just kind of have to, like, go back and figure out if I had a wrong number, if Tesla's updated how they're reporting that, or something like that. Yeah, so it looks like, I feel really dumb, but this also, like, loss gain thing is tripping me up, because it seems like it should be, I don't know. We'll figure it out, guys. Let's hop into the spreadsheet. That'll always help. All right. Yeah, and if you have questions, let me know. I see some super chats here. I'll definitely try to get to those before we wrap up the stream, for sure. And again, we're going to listen to the earnings call. Still got about 45 minutes before that. That'll be a different live stream, so the link for that is in the description. It should redirect you there once we wrap this up. But for now, we'll flip over to Excel for everyone's favorite part. If I can figure it out. I'd do more live streams just for the sake of being able to do them. All right, we made it. All right, automotive sales. Scroll back up here in my browser. So that was 16,661. Regulatory credits were 439. So we'll see the non-GAAP margin here in a minute. Energy sales, that was 2789. As you can see, analysts were 6% too high on that, 4% too low on automotive sales. And then services and other, a fair amount higher. So you can get the total revenue there. Analysts were 2% lower than the actual total revenue there, and you can see how that mixes out. Average selling price, we'll calculate that in a minute. So automotive profit, we just got to take out the expenses here. So that's 13,795. Regulatory credits, that stays. Energy profit. Looks like that was 1943. Services and other, 2880. And that should give us our gross profit, which matches Tesla's report. Great. So you can see gross profit almost $300 million higher than expected. That's going to be a combination of the top line beat here, which was about half a billion more than what analysts expected, and then the higher gross margins as well. So again, seems pretty strong, and seems to be the stronger way to get those numbers too, not relying as much on regulatory credits, which we can see there. So this is the best, you know, second best automotive gross margin X credit number that Tesla's had in the last year. It's been, with the exception of Q3 last year, right around 13% or so, 12.5% last quarter, now up to 15%. That's great. Great progress in one quarter. A lot of that driven by, of course, the higher delivery numbers and presumably getting costs more under control. Anytime that you have a new product like the new Model Y, it's going to take a little bit of time to get those processes running smoothly. Even just simple things as logistics, when you have sort of that disruption to your production system, that's going to have downstream effects all the way to the customer while these new systems get put in place. So I would hope that we could actually continue to see improvements on that even in the third quarter, which of course is going to be affected by the regulatory credit, EV credits, US EV tax credit. So something to keep in mind there. Energy gross margin, also nice little bump there after a little bit of a decline in Q4, some recovery there. Not quite as high as Q3 last year, but not far off. So really nice to see that energy gross margin holding steady. This is one that I do have a question on. This would be a really good analyst question if anyone was so inclined, but just energy gross margin expectations as regulatory credits and things like that shift. Tesla should have a pretty good handle on what the implications of that will be. It's more difficult to understand it externally. So maybe Tesla will talk a little bit about that, but Tesla's also usually pretty, I don't know, cards to the chest on things like that. So maybe even with a direct question, we wouldn't get much of an answer on that one. And then services and other, another step up there. So at the end of the day, 17.2%, 90 basis points, you know, around 90 basis points above where analyst expectations were. I could show more decimals here, which would make that make more sense. All right, R&D, let's throw that in here. It's 1589, so I'm happy to see that, again, we did have higher operating expenses, and that's not with, like, some decline in R&D from what was already a high last quarter. Maybe people feel differently about that, but I certainly don't mind Tesla spending more on R&D. They've proven to get extremely good returns on that throughout their history, so for me, that's just a sign that they have things that are worth spending money on, and I think that's exciting. So SG&A was a little bit higher, $110 million higher than last quarter, but certainly not out of bounds of any range that Tesla's historically been in. So operating expenses here. So there's no restructuring and other this quarter. So $29.55, that matches for Tesla. Tesla's number, $923, and that yields our 4.1% operating margin. So improvement by, you know, $500 million, half a billion dollars here in the operating income line, driven by all those things that we just talked about, improved gross margin, improved top line revenue from selling more cars. We'll see what the ASP looked like on those cars in a minute. Offset a little bit by higher expenses, but those higher expenses, probably 60-40 in terms of R&D versus SG&A, because you've got about a $180 million increase here, $115 million increase here. So the larger portion coming from R&D, which is a little bit more controllable. Not that SG&A is not entirely, but again, R&D more based on expectations of future returns for the business. All right, EBITDA, let's see. So that's 3401. Non-GAAP net income is 1393. GAAP net income 1172. Yeah, this Bitcoin stuff, man. I gotta get my head around this. It's affecting these numbers. Should also put them in the right spot, probably. Let's do stock-based comp first. Alright, so that was 443. And let's see. Yeah, I apologize that this portion is not a little bit smoother. So net income gap is 1170. So this should be 1172. So we'll see if this yields that. I'm not sure that it will. Well, embarrassingly, I may not be able to crack the code on that one. If anyone can help me just real quick with that, I'm slightly confused on that at the moment, but we'll put this in for now. So we're 33 cents gap, 40 cents non-gap. I'll just key in our gap earnings here for the moment, which would be, Oh, there we are. 222. Cracked it. Don't understand it, but we got the right answer. Okay, so I'm going to flip back to the browser because there's a few of those digital asset lines, and I finally found the right one for how we're entering things. So flip back here. So this is the reconciliation of gap to non-gap. This is where that digital assets line comes in. I'm still confused by the loss versus gain. I guess I was just mixed up. I think last quarter there was probably a loss, and then I was thinking it was a gain, and I think that's why I got confused here. So 222 of gain, but then you take that out of the reduction that you would have from non-gap to gap earnings, and that's how we're getting to this 1172. So it's basically your non-gap, then you subtract out stock-based compensation, you subtract out the loss from Bitcoin. The loss is negative here, 222. So that gets added back in, which means the gap between these is smaller than it would otherwise be if Bitcoin were excluded entirely. So hopefully that makes sense. Apologies that I had to be confused about it a little bit first before we got there, but we did get there. So let me flip back and we can work on ASP here. Okay. One final just comment on that. So you can see last quarter there was like a 15 cent spread between gap and non-gap, and this quarter it's only 7 cents of spread. It used to basically be 10 every quarter when this was just zero, because the only difference was stock-based compensation then. Now you're looking at the sum of these two numbers as the difference. So the, you know, Bitcoin, that's going to swing how wide this gap is. Just hopefully helpful context. When we're talking about price to earnings ratios, that is going to look at gap earnings. So Bitcoin gain is actually going to help Tesla's PE, but it would have hurt it last quarter, for example, right? Because it would have suppressed this gap earnings per share number by, you know, a couple cents. This time it's helping it out by 4 cents, I don't know, 3-4 cents, something in that ballpark. So long story short, it nets out over time, but any one individual quarter, you're going to get, you know, the volatility induced by that. At any rate, we're at $1.73 for the last 12 months now on a gap basis. So I don't know, what are we at? Three? I guess I haven't looked at the price in a while, but if it's still around 335, we're going to be at about 193 times price to earnings right now. And that is going to be a little bit higher price to earnings than what it would have been before, because you can see earnings per share gap basis down 21%. So we are at $1.82 before. So price to earnings, if we again say 335, before it would have been 184 times, now it's 193 times, right? So ironically, I don't know if ironically is the right way to put it, but maybe humorously, it's a good example of what I was talking about before we even got the earnings report here. Is that 184 times earnings, 193 times earnings, not really a significant difference. If it was like 8 times earnings versus 15 times earnings, that would be significant. But obviously the market is pricing in a lot of future growth for Tesla, and a lot of that future growth expectation is coming from what Tesla has demonstrated with version 13 of the software, of FSD software, what they're demonstrating with the Robotaxi initial rollout in Austin, and the market's belief, you know, belief, it's a spectrum, it's a market, but some expectation, at least from the market, that Tesla will be able to grow this bottom line from autonomy in the future. So the marginal difference that these earnings has on those expectations is marginal. It's just a small part of Tesla's market cap is what these fundamentals are at the moment. For good or bad, right? Like, some people are going to laugh at that and think it's absurd, and some people will take the other side of that, and that's the market that gets made. All right, free cash flow. So I think that was like 100 million, something like that. Let me flip back. find that. Sorry for the typing. Yeah, so 146 million. And again, that's just going to be a little bit lower than analyst expectations because CapEx would have been higher. Otherwise, this would have been better just based on basically this. Well, I guess operating income was pretty similar. so otherwise, free cash flow would have been similar if CapEx expectations were correct from analysts, but no one is probably spending too much time on that. Basically, they're just going to go off what Tesla's guided and amortize that out across four quarters. So nothing too crazy on the free cash flow line. All right, let's figure out ASP here. I'll quickly fill out our table. Looking for auto revenue from leasing. 1 second. So that was 435. Auto COGS from leasing was 228. And scroll all the way back to the top here for actual number of vehicles. $66.70. All right, there we see it. We'll put it in context back up here. So up about $1,800 from Q1, and costs only up about $400 or $500 from Q1, which is obviously resulting there in the better automotive gross margin X credits, which this number is excluding. And of course, excluding the leasing stuff there too. So this is actually looks like highest ASP in a couple of quarters for Tesla. Anytime you have a new product, that kind of makes sense, I think, generally, where you're probably pulling in or probably prioritizing deliveries and orders for higher trim vehicles. Certainly we saw that happen in the first quarter though too with sort of the launch series. I think that was called for the Model Y. Maybe some of those still being delivered in Q2. Q1, though, you've got the offset of having to work through like old Model Y inventory and having to give that away at a discount and things like that. Less of that probably happening in Q2. So I think a lot of those things obviously have to mix out, but mixing out favorably for Tesla here in the second quarter. I would suspect, well, Q3, again, it's going to be made weird by the EV tax credit implications, but in the absence of that, which is kind of dumb to look at because it does exist and it will affect the numbers, if that didn't happen, I would probably expect ASP to come down a little bit as hopefully volume increases again in the third quarter. But I would also expect costs to come down maybe even a little bit faster than ASPs, which would then hold gross margins, or keep them, maybe even improve them or keep them around that same level, which is obviously a healthy enough level for Tesla, because again, I think the most important thing with where the business is at today is that this cash keeps coming in, not necessarily free cash flow, but just operating cash flow keeps coming in, and Tesla can use that operating cash flow to continue to do things like add a bunch of H200 chips to Giga Texas and keep accelerating the progress for FSD, keep spending, $1.5 billion a quarter on various R&D projects. So you've got, $4 billion across R&D and R&D and CapEx this quarter. And probably we'll kind of continue around that rate, which is really just being funded by sales of these vehicles. So as long as Tesla feels like, hey, $4 billion a quarter is a good number for us and gives us the cash, so it lets us make the progress towards what our future business is going to be, that's really the priority for me and probably the priority for Tesla at the moment. All right, we got through it. It's 4 o'clock, so we got about 30 minutes. I do have to prep a little bit before the earnings call, just make sure nothing happens with the tech. I do see some super chats here, though. I want to try to get to as many of these as I can first. So thank you for those. Warbird, thank you. A couple of stickers here. Heisenberg, thank you. Sec129, thank you. Ben Shippers, thanks, appreciate that. Good to see you on here. John, awesome, thank you. Always appreciate that. Scott, thank you. Geekaholic, thank you. Ryan, we do have a question here. Rob, do you reckon auto gross margin is up despite Model Y ramp is because of FSD take rate going up? That's a good question. FSD is always a little bit weird because Tesla can also recognize more of that profit now. So that actually helps gross margin on a quarter-to-quarter basis. I don't know if that's changed too much in the last couple of quarters. Probably something I'd have to look at to remind myself of. But I would imagine that the FSD take rate is probably increasing just because the utility is increasing and the prices stay the same, right? So that would be my expectation. The degree of that increase is obviously the huge question. I think we're obviously starting from a pretty small base on the take rate. So you could have, in absolute numbers, a pretty small increase that could drive a relatively large percentage increase in the take rate. That being said, I don't know if that's going to be a significant contributor in terms of like those gross profit dollars, just because, again, that take rate is probably pretty small. I could do some math on that. I can't do it off the top of my head, but to see like what kind of an increase that might be, like for example, if you go to from 5% to 10% in just one market, you just have to look at like the US revenue and kind of do some math on that. But my hunch would be it's probably not the biggest factor. I think the biggest factor here is probably just mix with and Tesla might have, well, it's a year-over-year comparison in the shareholder letter. I was just going to say Tesla might have called that out if it was a big factor. But again, my guess is mix is probably the main driver there, with just probably more Model Ys being delivered this quarter and less old discounted Model Ys. Jay, thank you. Appreciate that. Doubt we'll hear much on transactions between XAI and Tesla on this call. We'll see. Obviously, XAI has posted about using Tesla Megapacks. Maybe Tesla would talk about that. Otherwise, yeah, I wouldn't suspect there would be anything too major there in terms of that conversation. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Really appreciate it. It's always fun to be back at these times and chat about Tesla. Overall, I guess to just kind of quickly wrap things up, and then we'll hop over to the earnings call stream. I think pretty good earnings. I guess maybe let's hop back and look at the share price here, see if anything's happened. Nothing. I think when we opened the letter, it was pretty much right around 334. So hilariously neutral, IV crushing response here. So if you sold any options, congratulations in either direction. But I think it kind of makes sense. I would lean pretty positive towards this report. I think we saw really good gross margins that were not overly influenced by regulatory credits. And generally, that's the thing that I'm looking for the most in terms of like the current business. And then outlook is probably even more important. I don't think Tesla said a ton here. Like, there was no big announcement about, oh, we're removing the safety rider and in this quarter or something like that. It's nothing too concrete in terms of that, which I think people would have liked to see, although certainly wouldn't have been my expectation. And then nice to see them reiterate the more affordable vehicles that actually did start production with, you know, initial production in June, and looks like expected for sale later this year. So I doubt we'll hear too much more on that probably until next quarter, to be honest, but good to have that reiteration as well. So overall, I think pretty positive. We'll go into the earnings call, and I think that's where we're going to get more information in terms of maybe some commentary on how Tesla views Austin is going. Maybe we'll hear some updates on what other markets might be coming soon, at what time, and those are probably the most interesting developments for now. So hope you all join me on that in about 25 minutes. This should redirect you there, but if not, the link is in the description. Alrighty, thank you.